It's 8:30, and you're listening to People of Interest on CKUW 95.9 FM. Currently in the city, we are looking at a temperature of 19 degrees Celsius, with the wind from the west at 3 kilometers per hour, gusting to 8. And joining me right now from Montreal is writer, musician, and community activist Stéphane Christophe, who's been doing a lot of following the Quebec student strike. So do we have you there, Stéphane?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, Stéphane, you want to maybe just bring us up to date a little bit, I mean, since the about some of the activities that's been happening over the past week.
Absolutely. Well, late last week, the Quebec Liberal government broke off talks with student federations and unions. It was quite a shock, a political shock here, because quite clearly in the past month, momentum has been building around the Quebec student strike and specifically in support of the student movement. It's now over 110 days that students have been on strike in Quebec. It's the longest strike in Quebec history. And now, given that the Quebec government has broken off negotiations, we really are facing a situation where the Quebec student strike has expanded into a broader social struggle, I would say, because also of the fact that the Quebec government imposed what was called Law 78. This law basically is a ban on any public protests that are in and around university or college campuses. And additionally, you cannot hold a public demonstration without the prior approval of the police services anywhere in Quebec. It's really incredible legislation. I know people are following the situation, but what it tangibly means is that protests are legally banned from downtown Montreal.
And that includes protests that, I mean, people may not necessarily be protesting in along with the student strike. It could apply to other issues as well, right?
Yeah, Law 78 is very broad and quite vague in a legal sense. So it provides a huge amount of power to the police to basically decide people's rights. I mean, if we look at Article 20 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it's the right of association and the right to peacefully assemble. This law is in ways a violation of that universal right because police are given the power to arbitrarily refuse and shut down any protest they feel, you know, politically doesn't suit the interests of the Quebec government. So this is going to become very, very hot in the next days because the Grand Prix, the F1, is going to be starting in Montreal this weekend, and there's many protests planned around this event. You know, it's an international event. There's a massive tourist influx generally every year when the Grand Prix happens here. But student groups and also environmental justice organizations are stating very clearly that in this context of a social crisis in Quebec, the Grand Prix can't just go off as normal. And I'm pretty sure that's what the reality is going to be. But the danger is that under Law 78 now in Quebec, that these protests that are being planned around the Grand Prix and around the student strike in tandem due to the fact that the government shut down negotiations, Law 78 is going to be used to curtail all of these demonstrations in the downtown core.
Now, I recall with the G20 in Toronto that there was some significant violations there, and a lot of it has been reported in recent weeks. I'm wondering if there are any sort of indications, because we've already seen a lot of arrests of students already, and I mean, are we looking at another sort of situation with, you know, makeshift prisons and similar sorts of violations? I mean, what sorts of things are being anticipated?
Well, I mean, let's just put things in perspective. largest mass arrest in Quebec's history since the War Measures Act was imposed here in Quebec a generation ago. It's actually more arrests than during the War Measures Act that was imposed here in Quebec, which, of course, holds a massive cultural, social, political resonance today. And I think it's really important for people to understand what's taking place in Quebec right now in regards to the student strike within the context of Quebec's history and the Quiet Revolution. One of the massive demands of the time was for free university education. It's really one of the unfulfilled promises of the social change that took place a generation ago in Quebec. But in regards to your question, I mean, the thing is certainly Law 78 is a very repressive tool. It's quite clear there's a legal consensus on the issue. The Quebec Bar Association has come out very clearly saying that the law violates Quebec civil liberties legislation, but it also violates the Charter in Canada. So importantly, I think that the laws will be struck down once it has gone through the process of the courts. But the thing is that the laws being imposed before that is given time to happen. So despite all this, though, people are still coming out in very significant numbers. This past weekend, there was a large demonstration in Montreal in defiance of the law. Organizers from the student unions refused to give the itinerary, the route of the demonstration to the police. And then again, the night that the government shut down negotiations, essentially walking out of the negotiating room, that's what the Liberal government did here in Quebec, not the first time in the student strike, there was estimated around 10,000 people came out in a demonstration organized, you know, within a couple of hours to reject the fact that the Quebec government had locked out the students once again.
Now, I mean, there's no unanimity of opinion in terms of the Quebec, you know, the demands they're making. I mean, there are Quebecers who don't necessarily support positions like free tuition and such. But is there a sense that with the invocation of Bill 78 that you've brought in allies that otherwise wouldn't be involved? Is that really, you know, pushed the levels up more in that regard in terms of uniting the Quebec people around the strike?
Yeah, well, prior to the strike, you know, there was always a very strong support for accessible education in Quebec. As I mentioned, there was a very major student strike in 1978 and then also in 1974 where students held massive protests for free university tuition. It was at that time that the major loans and bursaries programs were established in Quebec in response directly to the student strikes at that time. So there's always been a strong support for accessible university here in Quebec. Now, of course, you're absolutely right to say that Bill 78 totally changed the dynamic, the social and political dynamic in Quebec. When that law was imposed, it really angered a huge part of Quebec society. You know, you could see just in the reaction to the law, many artists, commentators who had been, you know, relatively non-engaged with the demands around the Quebec student strike became enraged that basically the right to protest in Quebec has now been erased. That's what's happened. So that's when communities across not only Montreal, but across Quebec, started the casseroles, pots and pans rallies in a very spontaneous way in different neighborhoods across the city. People at 8 p.m. every night continued to either go out onto the street in front of their house or bang pots and pans from their window in a response to Bill 78. Now there's been many, many demonstrations including a massive one on May 22nd, that many people have estimated that around 400,000 people participated in that protest, which was directed specifically at Law 78. And also, you're absolutely right to say that the imposition of this law has turned a lot of public opinion in a stronger way to be critical of the Liberal government here in Quebec.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a bit about the media. Now, according to what you've just told us, I mean, I think that non-Quebecers are somewhat familiar with the Black October and the War Measures Act being invoked and the controversy about that. What you're telling us is that what's happening right now blows that away. How are the media reporting on that reality?
Yeah. Well, I think that there isn't really a sense of the severity of the political situation right now in Quebec. I mean, there's a lot of kind of cynical reporting across Canada, rooted in this idea that the demand to halt hikes to university tuition is based in some sort of idea of students being entitled. But the reality is that these protests are being driven not from an individualistic sense, but more from the sense of collective responsibility to ensure that universities remain accessible. At a time of financial crisis, everybody knows that finances are tighter across the board for many families. And as university tuition goes up, the plain reality is that if this hike is imposed in Quebec, there's quite a significant layer of society that no longer would be able to access university. So the reason that people are collectively striking as students is to ensure and to fight for accessible education.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important, I think, to recognize, because it's not an individual choice, the strike. It's a collective decision made by hundreds of thousands of students in open votes, in assemblies, in university halls, in community centers, where people decide by democratic votes to continue this strike. And I want to note also that there's upwards of 170,000 students still in Quebec who've been on strike for almost 120 days. That's quite significant and historic.
But, okay, Stefan, I'm just about running out of time for this segment, but I just wanted to just inform you that, I'm sure you're aware of it, that there have been solidarity rallies across the country, including in Winnipeg. I believe that over this weekend and also last Thursday, there was some, about a couple of hundred people apparently showed up and banged pots and pans in the evening and they're wearing the red patches and such. Now, given that we have in cities across the country that students who are actually paying more in tuition than their Quebec counterparts, even with the hikes in place, what would you suggest would be an appropriate way of truly standing in solidarity with the Quebec student movement?
Well, I think the most important thing is that people fight for rights and access to education in their own context. There's a very important proposal that came out from the main student federation driving the strike here in Quebec, which is called GLAS. This proposal was to impose a bank tax, which would be around 0.7% a year on banks. The estimates are, and a progressive economic institute did studies here in Quebec, that if there was a 0.7% bank tax imposed in Quebec on banks, that university education would eventually be able to be paid for entirely through public funds generated through this bank tax. That's a very creative idea, and it's one that's gaining traction now. And I think the important thing across Canada is that there is a struggle here in Quebec, but there's also obviously struggles in communities across the country. And I think the strength of the Quebec movement right now is that it's rooted in a long history of community activism here. Mm-hmm. And I think that I really hope that similar sort of traditions, and, you know, Winnipeg has an incredible progressive history, of course, can be built in other places in Canada and fought within their own context, meaning that struggles could be developed in around student issues and other issues within the specific context of communities coast to coast.
Okay. Well, Stéphane Christophe, I'm afraid I have to let you go now, but I want you to thank us. Thank you very much for that update, and hopefully you'll keep us informed as events continue to crescendo. Thanks for joining us and sharing that with us.
My pleasure. Yes, have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
You as well. And that was Stéphane Christophe, writer and musician, community activist, and basically telling us what all has been going on, giving us a bit of a context to that dynamic historical events happening in La Belle Province. We're going to go to a brief break, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with James Bedham on Bill C-38. So do please stay in touch. You're listening to People of Interest on CKW 95.9 FM.
This is Robin Erickson, host of Hit the Big Wide Strum, Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 5, and it is with your generous support that CKUW is able to bring you 2 hours of great old-time and bluegrass music every week.
Friends and comrades, Mondragon Bookstore and Coffee House Worker Co-op, Winnipeg's seasoned vegan cafe, as well as Radical Bookstore and Neighborhood Grocer. Come rip it up on Sundays over our all-you-can-eat vegan brunch. The best Sunday brunch buffet to satiate your appetites. Pancakes, waffles, vegan quiche, hash browns, beans, salads, nut butters, maple syrup, fairly trade, coffee, aplenty. Open Sundays for brunch 10 to 3. Check us out online at mondragon.ca. Call us at 946-5241.
And we're joined right now by James Bedham. He's the leader of the Manitoba Greens. He's also a law student at the University of Manitoba and was also active over the weekend at rallies against Bill 78 and Bill C-38.
Yes.
So you can tell us a little bit, James, about Bill C-30, the Omnibus Budget Bill. So
sure. Well, go. Just go. Yeah, we got fast time here. Well, first, thanks, Mike, for having me on. I always appreciate to get on the radio here on CKUW. And just, I think the idea was, just because you ended the last segment on, I only heard the tail end of it, though, but about the Quebec student strike, was sort of to look to Quebec to a certain extent for inspiration, where people were, you know, really were standing up to fight hard for it. And so there was a solidarity march on Thursday night and mm-hmm. as well as one Saturday afternoon. And they both kind of tied together, although, you know, the two are separate. But I think as your guest, you know, concluded saying, it's best that we fight for our own rights in our own context. So when you look at the Omnibus Budget Bill, I think it's practically unprecedented. And it's also a bit strange that Mr. Harper, while in opposition, was critical of the then Liberal government for passing omnibus budget bills that amended numerous acts. And then now we have a 420-page budget bill that amends more than 70 acts. And some of the changes are real significant. They're repealing several acts, including the Fair Wages Act, which it was important on Saturday, was reminded to me by someone that's going to have a lot of impact on women's issues. They're going to amend rules around foreign workers so that foreign workers can get paid less money than Canadians. And the economic impacts of that really need to be thought through, because that means that a lot of Canadian employers now, why would you hire a Canadian when you can bring in a foreign worker and pay them less?
Without the benefits.
And they're not, you know, their eligibility for health care is limited. They're often tied to a certain employer. Like, they already, you know,
indentured servitude, essentially. Don't like it, you can go back.
It was already pretty strong, the arrangements that they were under, and now, you know, it's going to be worse. Mm-hmm. They're completely repealing the Canadian Environmental Assessment
Act. And this is a huge bill. It's like 425 pages. I mean, who can read all of that and really wrap your mind? I mean, have you read the entire budget bill?
I've read sections of it. I can't say I've read it cover to cover. I've read a lot of briefs out there. There are good organizations that are putting briefs out there. I mean, this includes the Green Party of Canada has put several summaries on their website. So has Eco Justice. So is the Canadian Environmental Law Association. So is the Sierra Club. I mean, there's a lot of good information out there, too, to point you to sections. I have read through. I've particularly taken a look at the new Canadian Environmental Assessment Act and some of the changes to the fish and habitat provisions. That's not to say the other changes aren't important. It's just, as a law student and someone who really cares passionately about environmental law, it's an area that is easier for me to immerse myself in than perhaps other areas of law. And I think they all matter. And there's no way we can have enough time to review them, right? Like as members of parliament or as Canadians publicly. And it's the way that it's being done that is so problematic, because we can have differences of opinions. We can have differences of politics. But when we start attacking information, when we start attacking accessibility and transparency, then everything falls apart because politics is about having different opinions. And I think we need a diversity of opinions to come up with new solutions. But the way that this government, you know, and there are so many examples, this isn't the first time they've used a budget bill this way. This is the third time in 4 years they've used the budget bill as a way of backdoor overruling environmental law. In 2009, they removed some pay equity for women. They overruled the Navigable Waters Protection Act to give fast approvals for projects. In 2008, and then 2009, my years may be off here, and I apologize. 2009, they passed provisions to SIA, which essentially overruled a Supreme Court decision from the previous December. So, you know, this has been a habit. They've eliminated, you know, they're going to eliminate the long-form census of Stats Canada, the Experimental Lakes area. And I don't know if your viewers know, but Tuesday night at the Unitarian Church here at 7 p.m. in Winnipeg, there's going to be a talk on that. So, you know, access to science and information. If we don't have that, then there's no way to hold the government to account.
Yeah, and I mean, I find that this government in particular tends to frame opposition in partisan political terms and use kind of, well, you know, smears, to put it, you know, in order to, basically that's how they confront opposition, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're against the tar sands, you're one of those puppets of foreign interests and whatnot. So I'm wondering how you would frame this issue. I mean, people who maybe, you know, tend to like the conservatives for whatever reason, you know, partisans, how could you frame this issue in a way that even a conservative would get it?
Well, yeah, and I think
I mean, you yourself are a partisan, so...
Yeah, no, I myself am partisan, but I actually appreciate you saying that, because I feel what this government is doing is they're acting like a bully and they want a reaction. I think that's fairly obvious. I actually refrain from using the government's name. I just call them the government because I think that just gives them a plug.
Big brother.
I think that just gives them a plug that they don't need. And I think it's really important that people realize that, and that what they're doing, it's more than partisan interests or ideas. And I mean, we've had key conservatives, people like John Fraser, who was a former fisheries minister and speaker of the House under Brian Mulroney and during the, in the conservative era. People like Tom Sitta, who was also, you know, a fisheries minister under Brian Mulroney, have spoken out against this. I think it's important to remember that the Fisheries Act was proclaimed in 1868, and actually Section 35 has been more or less consistent over that period of time. That was passed under John A. Macdonald, himself a conservative. When we brought in the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, that came under Brian Mulroney, himself a conservative. So this isn't...
Well, progressive conservative, to be accurate.
Okay,
there have been some changes, but
I will agree with that, but you know what?
That's part of the conservative history or whatever.
And there have been some changes, particularly, I think, in who's controlling the show, but I think a lot of the people that support them and vote for them maybe aren't as aware of what these changes are and what they are doing. So I think it's really important that we actually try to reach out and talk to people. Like, I mean, I hate to admit it, but I know I have friends and family members that vote conservative, and, you know, I have to try to engage them. But the answer isn't to react really harshly, because you kind of give them the response that they want, and it's hard not to. You know, it's hard to take the sort of turn the other cheek and try to take the moral high ground on this, because they're not doing that. Mm-hmm. But if we come down to that level, I think it degrades politics and it degrades the debate. And so when you're talking to conservatives, think about what these mean economically. So I touched on what making, you know, migrant foreign workers paid less. What does that mean for our economy? What does canceling a $2 million project for the Experimental Lakes mean for our economy? I mean, you think of the work that did in terms of reducing acid rain. Then you think of Lake Erie in Toronto and the developments along the shoreline now since they've been able to slowly recover it. Then you think of Lake Winnipeg here in Manitoba and the need to do the same, granted with a different pollution problem, but a lot of the same commonalities, I believe.
Would it be accurate to say that with the passage of this omnibus bill, which has not had much time, allow for much time for a cross-examination, which we would do with any bill, no matter which government was in power or in which party was in power, that you open the door to making mistakes that could affect people on a human level?
I think so. I definitely think so. The level of mistakes, and as you said, it's the level of review. You know, governments are going to put acts through. Some are going to work, some aren't going to work, and you're going to have to follow up and look to see how they've went through. I think I'd just point out there was an MP out in BC, Wilkes, who himself indicated, oh, I have my own, you know, concerns about this, and I might consider voting to split them out quickly less than a day after he retracted. Obviously, someone from, you know, the PMO's office brought the hammer down on him. But he even said, do you want me to sit as an independent? So, you know, there are broad changes, and if we can talk through to people, I mean, I'm not... You know, I'd love to see 13 MPs change, but I think that may be a little bit unrealistic, all things considered. But even one or two flipping on a matter of principle would say something, because we're going to have to watch and we're going to have to track and monitor what these changes have done for people to understand them.
Although, I mean, from my own historical recollection, MPs have flipped. I mean, John Nunziata, the Liberal Party, you know, on a point of principle, didn't support the government on the GST. And, I mean, there are other examples, and I don't see that it ended up having a big impact.
Well, you know.
And it can always be framed as, well, this whatever.
Well, I mean, but what's the alternative? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we were out there making noise on Thursday and as well as Saturday in particular, where we ended at Joyce Bateman's office.
Yeah, tell us about that encounter. How did...
So essentially, a lot of us, you know, we started from the Merck Center at 430 Langside and headed up to Joyce Bateman's office in Cordon and Daly. Basically left a lot of chalk messages for her as well as some sort of signs on her window. It sort of ties in as well as today. There's a ton of websites across Canada that'll be blacked out. They're calling it Blackout Speak Out Day. Once again, deals with access to information. And the idea was just to raise awareness, to bring solidarity amongst the people that are aware. But I think most importantly, and why I'm happy to be on the radio today, is then to talk outwards and to spread that word out to others, to talk to your friends, to talk to your family, and to talk to the people that you know that aren't necessarily political. Because there's a lot of people that, you know, they don't care about following the political news every day. And that's fine, but we need to reach out to them and say, well, this does matter. Because you're a seasonal employee and they're going to change unemployment insurance. And, you know, this is going to make drastic changes for your life and your ability to maintain your current seasonal occupation. I mean, there are so many ways, unfortunately, with 70 acts changed in 420 pages. I can't break down the number of different ways this is going to impact people's lives, and I suggest that they read, and they don't necessarily have to read the law per se, unless there's someone who really enjoys that, like myself, mm-hmm. but they can read a lot of summaries that will break it down to them in short, concise terms, and of course, you know, okay. Use your discretion on sources.
Okay, and now that we're just about out of time, in the next 30 seconds, is there a website that you might recommend that people get to inform themselves better?
I guess I'm being partisan here, but I will plug greenparty.ca. There's a lot of good briefs on that. As I said, EcoJustice, the West Coast Environmental Law Association, Sierra Club of Canada, I guess it could be a little bit self-serving as well. Manitoba Wildlands here in Manitoba does a lot of local news coverage. The Eco Network here in Manitoba, the Green Action Center. I mean, the good thing is there's no shortage of people talking and debating and discussing and fleshing out the 425 pages for us. So there are a lot of ways to get informed. So I think that maybe helps people. I know that's maybe too many plugs, but just Google bills C-38 and budget and start reading. And read both sides, but try to understand it for yourself, you know?
Okay, James Bedham, leader of the Manitoba Greens and law student. Thank you very much for also the host of Motel 6 on Sunday mornings.
We play some good music.
right here on CKW. So thank you very much for sharing those insights with us, James. Appreciate it. And thanks also to Stefan Christoph for joining us earlier in the hour to give us an update on what's happening at...